Welcome to the deep dive. Ever wondered what your salary would really feel like if you moved somewhere else, like a major global city? Today, we're going to look at a specific number, $200,000 a year. And the big question is, does that buy you a comfortable, maybe even exciting life? Or could it feel, well, surprisingly tight?
Yeah, we're calling this one $200K smile or squeeze. Because that's really what it boils down to sometimes.
Exactly. So where are we looking?
We've gathered a whole load of data looking at six key global hotspots. London in the UK.
Okay.
San Francisco, California in the US. Toronto, Ontario in Canada.
Right.
The powerhouse that is Hong Kong. Sydney down in Australia. And Auckland in New Zealand.
That's a great list. And we're not just looking at one type of person, are we?
No, that's key. We're comparing two scenarios in each city. First, a single professional.
Makes sense.
And second, a family of, let's say, two adults, two young kids under six. Same $200K income, but potentially very different outcomes.
Right, because kids change the financial picture quite a bit.
Definitely. So our mission today is really to cut through the noise, you know, give you a clear idea of where that $200K might stretch the furthest.
And where taxes and just the sheer cost of living might take a bigger bite than you'd think.
Precisely. Now, we should probably say up front, this is a high-level comparison.
Yeah, good point. Tax systems are incredibly complex.
They really are. So we're using currency conversions from early May 2025, just so everyone knows. That's roughly one USD equals 0.75 pounds, 1.38 Canadian, 7.75 Hong Kong dollars, 1.56 Aussie dollars, and 1.68 Kiwi dollars.
Okay.
And we're using standard deductions where applicable, looking at city center costs. It's not exhaustive, but it's a solid data-driven starting point.
Think of it as like the first step if you're dreaming about a big international move, right? Reality check on the finances.
Exactly. A shortcut to understanding that financial landscape.
Okay, let's get into it. Where do we start? Taxes, I assume.
Yep. Got to start with taxes.
Yeah.
It's the first thing that hits your paycheck, and wow, does it vary.
It dictates the all-important take-home pay.
Totally. Different countries, different approaches to tax, different social safety nets. It all leads to pretty big gaps in what you actually get to keep. Let's kick off in the UK, London specifically. That 200K USD is about 150,000 pounds.
Okay, 150K in London. How does the tax system work there?
Well, it's progressive. The more you earn, the higher the rate on different chunks of your income. You start with the tax-free bit, the personal allowance.
Right, I heard of that.
But here's the catch. At 150K, that personal allowance is actually shrunk down to zero. It gets reduced once you earn over 100 pounds and disappears completely by about 125K.
Oh, wow. So no tax-free income at this level.
Nope. You're paying 20% on the first chunk, then 40%, and then 45% on anything over roughly 125,000 pounds. And that's before national insurance.
Ah, yes, national insurance. Another deduction.
Yeah, it's another contribution. It's 8% on earnings between about 12,500 to 50,000 pounds. Then it drops to 2% on earnings above that.
So crunching those numbers, for our single professional in London on 150K gross, what's left?
After income tax and national insurance, the estimated net take-home is around 91,286 pounds per year.
Okay, 91K take-home. Now, what about the family? Does the UK system help them out more?
Well, this is where it gets interesting and maybe a bit counterintuitive. The UK does have child benefit for two kids. It's worth about 2,200 pounds a year.
Okay, that helps.
But there's something called the High Income Child Benefit Charge, or HICBC. If one parent earns over 60,000 pounds, that benefit starts getting clawed back through extra tax.
And at 150K?
150K, it's completely clawed back. The whole 2,200 pounds is effectively gone through the tax system.
So the single earner family, they take home the same as the single person?
Pretty much exactly the same, around 91,286 not net. The child benefit advantage disappears entirely at this income level for a single earner.
That seems tough on single-earner families.
It can be, yeah. And there's this notorious effective marginal tax rate spike between 100 pound and 125K. Or because you're losing that personal allowance, your effective tax rate on that extra money can actually be over 60%. It's quite a quirk.
60%. Okay, that's definitely something to be aware of. Let's hop across the pond. USA, San Francisco. $200,000 USD stays $200,000 USD.
Right. Now, the U.S. system, It's got layers. You've got the federal income tax first. That's progressive too. Rates from 10% up to 37% in 2024. And there's a standard deduction you can take off your income first.
Okay, federal level. But then there's state tax too, right? Especially in California.
Exactly. California has its own progressive income tax, and it's one of the highest in the U.S. Rates go from 1% up to over 12%. Plus, you have FICA taxes.
FICA.
Yeah, that funds Social Security. That's 6.2% tax, but only up to a certain income cap each year. And Medicare, which is 1.45% on all earnings.
Okay, lots of different deductions. So for our single professional in SF, $200K is gross. What's the mitt?
After federal tax, California state tax, and those FICA contributions, the estimated take-home is approximately $134,629 a year.
$134K, that's quite a bit higher than the London figure in USD terms. Now, the family of four in SF.
Here's where the U.S. system offers a bit more help at this specific income level compared to the U.K. example. There's a federal child tax credit, or CTC.
Right, the CTC. How much is that?
It's worth up to $2,000 per qualifying child under 17. Now, it does start to phase out at higher incomes, but the phase-out threshold for married couples filing jointly is $400,000.
So our 200 Thai family is well under that limit.
Correct. They get the full credit, so $4,000 for their two kids. This boosts their estimated net annual take-home significantly, up to around $153,531.
Okay, so $153K for the family versus $134K for the single. That child tax credit makes a real difference there, unlike the UK's disappearing child benefit at this level.
It really does. It highlights how different structures prioritize family support at different income points.
All right, let's head north now. Canada, Toronto, Ontario. 200K USD is about 276,000 Canadian dollars.
Yep, 276K CAD. And Canada, much like the U.S., has both federal and provincial taxes.
So double layer again.
Double layer again. Federal rates go up to 33%. Ontario's provincial rates top out around 13.16%. Then you also have mandatory contributions to the Canada Pension Plan, CPP, and Employment Insurance, EI.
CPP and EI. Got it. What about child benefits in Canada, like the U.S. CTC?
Canada has the Canada Child Benefit, the CCB.
Yeah.
But unlike the U.S. CTC at this income, the CCB is very, very heavily income tested.
Meaning at 276K CAD.
At that income level, a family is almost certainly going to receive very little, or more likely, absolutely zero from the CCB. It phases out much earlier.
So for both the single person and the family in Toronto, same take home again.
Essentially, yes. The estimated net annual take-home for both comes out around $178,636 Canadian dollars. The CCB just doesn't factor in at this earnings level.
So high marginal tax rates in Canada and family benefits really disappear quite quickly as income rises.
That's a fair summary. The combined federal and provincial bite is significant. One thing to note, though, is that CPP and EI contributions are capped, meaning you pay those percentages up to a certain maximum income level each year. $68,500 for CPP base, $73,200 for CPP2, $63,200 for EI in 2024, and then you stop paying for the rest of the year. So unlike income tax, those specific deductions don't keep rising indefinitely with income.
Okay, that's useful context. Right now for a big shift, let's go to Hong Kong. $200 USD translates to a whopping 1,550,000 Hong Kong dollars.
Yeah, big numbers there. And Hong Kong is famous for its tax system, right?
Simple and low, that's the reputation.
Pretty much. They have a salaries tax with progressive bands, 2%, 6%, 10%, 14%, up to 17%. Or there's a standard rate of 15% on your net income, up to HK$5 million. Crucially, you pay whichever calculation results in less tax.
Oh, okay, so you get the better deal automatically, and they have allowances.
Yes, quite generous ones. A basic allowance, a married allowance, and a child allowance per child. Plus, mandatory retirement savings are via the Mandatory Provident Fund, MPF, but the employee contribution is capped at a relatively low amount, just HK$1,500 per month.
So, low tax rates, good allowances, capped retirement contributions, what does that mean for take-home? Single professional, $1.55 million HKD gross.
After tax and that capped MPF, their estimated net is around 1,313,500 HKD.
$1.31 million net. And the family.
They benefit even more from the married allowance and the child allowances. Their estimated net take-home is higher, around $1,380,140 HKD.
Wow. Okay, that is substantially higher net income than anywhere else we've looked at so far. That low tax reputation seems well-earned.
It really stands out, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That simplicity and lower burden is a major draw for many.
Definitely. Okay, let's swing back down under. Australia, Sydney, 200K USD is about 312,000 Aussie dollars.
AED, 312K. Australia uses a progressive income tax system, similar to the UK and Canada in structure. There's a tax-free threshold first.
And the rates.
They climb up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
16%, then 30%, 37%. And the top rate of 45% kicks in for income over 190,000 LDAUD.
So our 312-2LK earner is well into that top bracket.
Oh yeah, a significant chunk of their income is taxed at 35%. Plus, there's the Medicare levy that's 2% of taxable income to help fund public health care.
Okay, income tax plus Medicare levy. Anything else?
Yes, potentially.
Yeah.
There's the Medicare levy surcharge, the MLS. This is an extra levy on higher earners who don't have appropriate private hospital insurance.
Ah, so it's like a penalty for not having private cover.
Kind of, yeah. The income thresholds are around 97K for singles and 194K for families. Our 312-2LK earner is well above that. So unless they pay for private hospital cover, they'll likely face an MLS surcharge of 1%, 1.25%, or 1.5%, depending on their exact income tier. We'll assume the 1.5% here.
So private insurance becomes almost mandatory to avoid that extra tax.
For many high earners, yes, it makes financial sense. Also, Australia has the superannuation guarantee that's mandatory retirement savings, but it's funded by the employer on top of your salary, currently 11%. It doesn't reduce your take-home pay directly.
And family benefits.
Like Canada, the family tax benefit parts A and B are income tested and highly unlikely at 312-2LK.
Okay, so for both the single person and the family in Sydney, assuming they are paying that 1.5% MLS, either as tax or via insurance premiums, what's the net?
The estimated net annual take-home for both is around $194,542 Australian dollars.
$194, 5K AUD. So quite a significant tax take again with that top marginal rate hitting hard, plus Medicare, plus the MLS impact.
Exactly. It's a high tax environment at this income level, similar in overall burden to perhaps Canada or the UK, but structured differently.
Right. Last stop on our tax tour, New Zealand, Auckland. $200 USD equals about 336,000 New Zealand dollars.
NZD 336K. New Zealand also has a progressive system called PAYE, pay as you earn.
And the top rate?
The top marginal rate is 39%, and it kicks in for income over $180,000 NZD.
So quite a bit lower threshold for the top rate compared to Australia?
Yes, much lower. You hit that 39% bracket relatively quickly. There's also the ACC earners levy, which is about 1.67% on income up to a cap, funding their accident compensation scheme.
Okay, PAYE tax, ACC levy. What about retirement savings?
New Zealand has KiwiSaver. It's technically voluntary, but very common. Employees typically contribute a minimum of 3%, 4%, 6%, 8%, or 10% of their pre-tax salary, and employers often contribute too. We'll assume a 3% employee contribution here as a baseline.
And family support, working for families' tax credits.
Similar story again, those are income tested and basically eliminated at an income of 336K NZD. The abatement threshold is quite low.
So for both single and family in Auckland, what's the net maybe before and after that KiwiSaver?
Okay, before factoring in a KiwiSaver deduction, the estimated net take-home is around $223,331 in NZAD. If we then take out a typical 3% employee KiwiSaver contribution, that reduces the immediate disposable income to about $213,251 LENZD.
So $213K, $223K net NZD. Relatively high tax burden again, top rate kicks in early, and KiwiSaver impacts immediate cash flow, even though it's savings.
That sums it up well. You see quite a range in net outcomes across these six locations, just from taxes alone.
Absolutely fascinating. Okay, so we know roughly what's left in the public account after the tax authorities have taken their share. Now, the $1 million question, or maybe the $200K question, how far does that money actually go? Let's talk cost of living.
Right. This is crucial. High take-home pay doesn't mean much if everything costs a fortune. Let's start with the absolute monster expense for most people. Housing, rent.
Yeah, gotta live somewhere.
Yeah.
What are the city center averages looking like? Let's maybe stick to USD for easier comparison here.
Good idea. So average monthly rent for a one-bedroom apartment in the city center, London, around 2,961 USD, San Francisco, even higher at $3,227.
Wow, pricey.
Toronto comes down quite a bit, about $8,820 USD, Hong Kong, 2,144 USD, Sydney, similar to HK, around 2,134 USD, and Auckland. Seems the most affordable for a one-bed central, around $1,276 USD per month.
Okay, quite a spread already. Now, what about for our family needing more space? A three-bedroom in the city center?
This is where the numbers really jump. London averages $5,577. Pretty much the same, $5,541.
Ouch, that's a lot.
Yeah, it's huge. Toronto jumps too, but less dramatically, to $2,968 USD. Hong Kong. It's very expensive, $4,604 USD. Sydney, also really hefty, $4,324 USD. And Auckland, climbs to 2,424 USD GUSD per month.
Okay, looking at those three bed numbers, London, SF, Sydney, even Hong Kong, rent alone could eat up, what, 40, 50, even 55% or more of the net income we talked about?
Easily. For families, housing in those specific cities becomes an absolutely dominant factor in the budget. Even though Hong Kong had that high take-home pay, the absolute cost of family-sized housing is immense.
Whereas Toronto and Auckland look relatively more manageable for family housing, comparatively speaking.
Comparatively, yes. Still a big chunk of change, but not quite the same eye-watering percentage of net income as in, say, central London or SF. And remember, these are city center averages.
Right, you could save money living further out, but then you trade commute time and costs.
Exactly. It's always a trade-off.
Okay, housing is the giant. What about other essentials? Groceries, how much are we budgeting per month?
Okay. Groceries. For a single person per month, again in USD, London around $333. San Francisco, noticeably more, $450. Toronto, about $326. Hong Kong, $323. Sydney, $385. And Auckland, $357.
SF seems like an outlier there on the high side for a single person.
It does. Now for the family grocery bill per month, London, about $933 USD. San Francisco, a big jump again, $3,350. Toronto, $1,014. Hong Kong, $1,032. Sydney, surprisingly maybe a bit lower here, $897. And Auckland, $952 USD.
So groceries are significant, obviously, but maybe less variable as a percentage of income compared to housing.
It's often suggested, yeah. Import reliance can push up costs for certain goods.
Okay. What about keeping the lights on? Utilities, electricity, heating, water, etc. for a standard apartment?
Less dramatic variation here generally. London averages about $311 USD a month.
Yeah.
San Francisco, $230. Toronto seems quite low, $188. Hong Kong, $248. Sydney, $198. And Auckland, $143.
So Toronto really stands out as cheaper for utilities. London maybe a bit on the higher side.
Seems that way, based on these estimates.
All right. Getting around town. Public transport. Monthly pass cost.
This varies quite a bit, too. London's public transport is notoriously expensive, about $240 USD for a monthly pass covering central zones.
Yeah, I've heard that about the tube.
San Francisco is much cheaper, $95. Toronto, $130. Hong Kong is very efficient and quite affordable, just $68 USD. Sydney is also relatively expensive, $139. And Auckland, $128 USD.
So London and Sydney stand out as pricey for public transport. Hong Kong, very cheap, and obviously if you need a car.
Oh, yeah. Car ownership, purchase, insurance, fuel, parking, especially in these major cities, adds a whole other significant layer of cost. We're mostly focusing on public transport here for simplicity.
Understood. Okay, now for a really big one, and one where systems differ massively, healthcare costs. We touched on Medicare levies, but what about actual insurance premiums or out-of-pocket estimates?
Huge differences here. Let's start with the UK again. London. The NHS covers most things, but if you want private medical insurance for faster access or broader choice, it might cost, say, $87 USD a month for a single person, maybe $200 for a family. It's supplemental for most.
Okay, relatively low because the NHS is the main provider. Now, the U.S., San Francisco.
This is the big outlier. The U.S. system is primarily private and employment-based, and if you're buying an unsubsidized plan on the individual market, like a mid-range silver plan, wow. For a single person around age 40, average premiums could be around $656 USD per month.
$656 a month.
Yep. And for a family, easily $705 USD per month or even more. These are just premiums, not counting deductibles, copays.
That is just astronomical compared to the UK figure.
It's a completely different world for healthcare financing now. Canada, Toronto, they have the Provincial Healthcare Plan, OHIP in Ontario, covering essential services. But many people get private insurance through work for extras like drugs, dental, vision. That might cost around $181 USD a month for single, $362 for family.
Okay, more than the UK supplement, but way less than the US primary cost. Hong Kong.
Hong Kong has a good public system, but private healthcare is also very common, especially among expats and higher earners. Getting estimates is tricky, but maybe $258 USD monthly for single, $645 for family for decent private cover. It varies widely.
Still significantly less than SF Australia, Sydney.
Well, we mentioned the Medicare levy surcharge. To avoid that 1.5% extra tax at this income, you need private hospital cover. That cover might cost around $199 USD a month for a single and $401 or more for a family, depending on the level of cover. So it's a cost you basically have to factor in.
Right. The MLS effectively mandates it. And New Zealand, Auckland?
Similar structure to the UK. In some ways, a public system covers a lot, but private insurance is common for quicker access to specialists or elective surgery. Estimates are lower, maybe $74 USD monthly for single, $149 for a family for private cover.
Okay, summing up healthcare. The US is just way, way out in front on cost. Australia's MLS makes private cover a significant mandatory-ish expense. The others have primary public systems with varying costs for supplemental private cover.
That's a good overview. The US cost is a massive factor.
And for our family scenario, one more potentially huge cost, childcare, especially for kids under school age.
Oh, absolutely enormous. This can rival rent in some cities.
Yeah.
Full-time care for a child under three. In inner London, the average is estimated around $2,473 USD per month.
Per child.
Usually per child, yes. San Francisco, yeah. Similarly high, but $2,459 USD per month.
Okay, basically $5,000 a month for two young kids in London or SF childcare.
Potentially, yes. Yeah. It's staggering. Toronto, lower, but still significant, $1,274 USD per month. Hong Kong. Center-based care might be around $1,032 USD, but here's a key difference. Hiring a live-in domestic helper is very common and often considerably cheaper for full-time childcare. That's a unique factor.
Right. The domestic helper situation in HK Sydney?
Sydney is up there with London and SS again. Estimates based on daily rates suggest it could be around $2,436 USD per month.
Wow. And Auckland?
More in line with Toronto, estimated around $1,250 USD per month for center-based care.
So, childcare costs, London, SF, Sydney are incredibly expensive. Toronto and Auckland, more moderate, but still a huge budget item. And Hong Kong has that alternative domestic helper route, which changes the calculation.
Exactly. Government subsidies exist in some places, but they rarely cover the full cost, especially at higher income levels or for very young children. It's a massive financial pressure point for families.
No kidding. Okay, we've crunched a lot of numbers on taxes and essential costs, but life isn't just about spreadsheets, right? What about the other stuff? Work culture, schools, safety, just the general vibe?
Absolutely critical factors. These softer elements often make or break the experience of living somewhere. Let's talk work-life balance.
Yeah, how hard are people working? How much vacation do they get?
Generally speaking, New Zealand and Australia have reputations for a more relaxed work culture. Strong emphasis on balance often rank highly for it. They typically offer more statutory paid leave too, like 4 weeks minimum.
Okay, sounds appealing. Canada?
Canada also tends to rank well for work-life balance, often has shorter average working weeks than the U.S., for example. Statutory leave varies by province, but might start lower, maybe 2 weeks, but builds up. Parental leave policies are often quite generous and shareable.
Yeah.
The UK generally mandates 4 weeks of paid leave. Maternity leave is relatively generous, but the work culture itself, particularly in sectors like finance in London, can be very intense.
And the US?
The US is an outlier here. There's no federal mandate for paid vacation leave at all. While many professional jobs offer it, it's often less than in other countries. Longer working hours are common, and maintaining balance can be challenging.
Hong Kong?
Hong Kong is known for being very competitive, often involving long hours. Statutory leave starts low, maybe 7 days, increasing with service. Parental leave is generally less generous than in, say, Canada or the UK.
So a real divergence there. ABS, NZ, Canada maybe leaning towards better balance, US and Hong Kong towards more intense work cultures?
That's often the perception, yeah.
Yeah.
Though it varies hugely by industry and company, of course.
True. Okay, for families, education is paramount. How do the school systems compare in quality?
Well, all these locations offer high-quality education options, both public and private. The structures differ a bit. The UK and Hong Kong systems, with A-levels in the HKDSE, tend towards earlier specialization in secondary school.
Right.
The US often emphasizes breadth, like the liberal arts model at university. Canada, Australia, and New Zealand are perhaps structurally a bit closer to the UK model in some ways.
And in terms of outcomes, like international rankings?
If you look at something like the PISA rankings, which test 15-year-olds in reading, math, and science, East Asian systems like Hong Kong consistently perform at the very top.
Okay.
Among our specific group here, Canada generally ranks highest and well above the OECD average. Then usually Australia, the UK, New Zealand, and the US follow, all typically scoring above the OECD average as well.
So all providing a good standard of education, broadly speaking.
Yes. And when you look at world university rankings, like QS or Times Higher Education, the US and UK absolutely dominate the top tier. But you find excellent world-class universities in Canada, Australia, Hong Kong, and New Zealand too. Access to quality education isn't really a deciding factor against any of these locations.
Good to know. Okay, what about the general vibe? Safety, public services, environment, even the weather. Quality of life rankings.
Yeah, this is subjective but important. Global quality of life surveys, like Mercer's, consistently rank cities like Auckland, Vancouver, which is culturally similar to Toronto in many ways, Sydney and Toronto very highly.
What puts them high?
Factors like personal safety, environmental quality, relatively good public services, stability. Cities like Zurich, Vienna often top those lists globally.
Where do the others fall?
San Francisco and London usually rank lower than those top Canadian Australasian cities, often pulled down by higher cost of living, maybe some urban issues like crime perception or infrastructure strain. Hong Kong's ranking can vary, sometimes lower due to density and cost, despite its efficiency and safety. The OECD's Better Life Index also tends to score countries like Australia and Canada highly on well-being metrics.
And safety and environment generally?
NZ, Australia, Canada are widely perceived as very safe countries with high environmental quality, lots of access to nature. London, SF, Toronto are major global cities with all the associated benefits and challenges. Hong Kong is incredibly safe and efficient, but extremely dense.
Public services, does the tax level correlate?
Generally, you tend to see higher levels of investment in public services, transport, healthcare, social support in the higher tax countries like Canada, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, compared to the lower tax environments of the US and Hong Kong, although the quality and efficiency are always debated.
Makes sense. And climate, very briefly.
Huge variation. Australia, famous for sunshine. UK, temperate, often cloudy, mild winters, warm summers. Canada, distinct seasons, cold winters, especially in Toronto, warm summers. NZ, generally temperate, maritime climate. SF, famously mild, often foggy, not too hot, not too cold. Hong Kong, subtropical, hot and humid summers, mild and dry winters. Really depends what you prefer.
Yeah, personal preference is key there. You mentioned healthcare costs earlier, but what about healthcare quality? Does high spending equal better results?
That's the fascinating part. Often, no. The U.S. spends by far the most on healthcare per person globally.
We saw those insurance costs.
Exactly. But it frequently lags behind many other developed countries, including most of the ones on our list, in terms of actual health outcomes like life expectancy, infant mortality, and management of chronic conditions.
So where does the U.S. system fall short?
Rankings like the Commonwealth Fund's comparison of healthcare systems across high-income countries consistently place the U.S. last or near the bottom overall. They score poorly on access, equity, administrative efficiency, and even some outcome measures, despite pockets of excellence.
And who ranks higher?
Systems like Australia's, the Netherlands, the UK's often rank near the top in those comparisons for providing good quality, accessible, and equitable care more efficiently. Canada and New Zealand typically perform well too, often praised for universal access, although waiting times for certain procedures can be a challenge, similar to the UK sometimes. Hong Kong's dual system is generally seen as efficient.
So the U.S. situation is a real paradox, highest spending, but not the best outcomes overall.
It's a major point of discussion and debate, that disconnect between spending and results.
Okay, we've covered taxes, essential costs, work life, quality of life. After all that, is there actually any money left over for, you know, fun? Discretionary spending, saving, travel, the fun fund?
The fun fund. Yeah, that's really the bottom line for personal finances, isn't it? After you pay for necessities, taxes, housing, groceries, transport, healthcare, childcare, what's left?
And the answer varies a lot, I imagine.
Hugely. In cities with sky-high housing and childcare costs like London, SF, Sydney, even with a $200K income, that fun fund might feel surprisingly squeezed, especially for the family. In the U.S., add in those healthcare premiums.
Whereas somewhere with lower taxes like Hong Kong might leave more on paper, but high rent could still eat into it.
Precisely. Toronto and Auckland might offer a bit more breathing room after housing childcare compared to the most expensive cities, but the higher taxes mean the starting net amount is lower. It's a constant balancing act.
Can we get a quick feel for fun costs, like a coffee, a night out?
Sure. A cappuccino, for instance, tends to be pricier in places like San Francisco and Hong Kong, maybe $5.40 is USD. Cheaper in Sydney and Auckland, more like $3.30, $3.50 US.
Okay, and a date night, say, dinner for two and a couple of movie tickets.
Hong Kong actually seems relatively affordable for that, maybe $90 USD all in. London and San Francisco are quite a bit pricier, perhaps $130, $150 USD. The others fall somewhere in between.
And travel, getting away from it all.
Big difference here based on geography. London and Hong Kong are phenomenal international travel hubs. You can get almost anywhere relatively easily and offered affordably.
Right, location advantage.
Sydney and Auckland being much more geographically isolated. Flights, especially long-haul international ones, tend to be significantly longer and more expensive. That impacts your ability or willingness to travel far. Toronto and FF offer good North American and decent international connections.
Okay, lots to weigh up. So let's try and pull it all together. We've been through the numbers, the lifestyle factors.
Yeah.
Where does our $200K salary shine brightest, and where is it more of a squeeze?
Yeah, the final tally. And again, the disclaimer.
Yeah.
Best is totally subjective. Depends on your priorities.
Understood. But financially, who are the winners and losers on paper?
Highest take-home pay. Hong Kong, definitely, especially for families benefiting from allowances. The U.S., specifically SF in our example, also offered a relatively high take-home for the family due to the child tax credit being available with this income.
Lowest take-home.
Generally, the U.K., Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, due to higher overall tax burdens at this income level.
But then costs flip things around. Highest costs were...
Housing was brutal in Hong Kong, London, San Francisco, and Sydney. Childcare was incredibly high in SF and Sydney, and also London. Healthcare costs were overwhelmingly highest in the U.S., SF.
And lowest costs, relatively speaking?
Toronto and Auckland seem to offer slightly more moderate housing and childcare costs compared to the absolute peaks. Hong Kong had low taxes, offsetting some of its high housing cost impact on the overall budget percentage, maybe.
So how might a single person weigh this versus a family?
Different priorities.
Different priorities, right?
Absolutely. A single professional might prioritize career opportunities, which are strong in global hubs like London, SF, HK, Toronto, Sydney. Disposable income might look best on paper in HK, but you have to factor in that rent. If international travel is key, London and HK are prime hubs.
And for the family.
Priorities often shift towards things like quality of life, safety, good schools, and work-life balance. Canada, Australia, and New Zealand often score very highly on these qualitative measures.
Even though the taxes are higher.
Right. The higher taxes might be seen as contributing to those public services and safety nets. Financially, the high take-home in SF or HK can be appealing, but it gets offset by those huge housing, childcare, and U.S. healthcare costs. It's a complex trade-off.
Okay, so let's do a lightning round. Quick summary of the trade-offs for each spot for someone on $200K USD, Hong Kong.
Low tax, high take-home if you can manage the astronomical housing costs.
Mm.
Dynamic international hub, great travel, but intense work culture, often small living spaces.
U.S. San Francisco.
Great for tech careers, relatively high family take-home pay on paper, but faces extremely high housing and childcare costs, plus very expensive and complex healthcare.
UK, London.
Major finance, culture, travel hub for Europe. Access to the NHS is a plus. Downsides are high taxes, that weird marginal rate spike, and very expensive rent and childcare.
Canada, Toronto.
High quality of life, good work-life balance rep, diverse city, but high taxes take a bite. Housing and childcare might be more moderate than the absolute peaks, but still expensive. Good access to U.S. and nature.
Australia, Sydney.
Amazing outdoor lifestyle. Beaches, strong economy. Downsides. High taxes, very high rent and childcare. The MLS makes private health cover almost essential, adding cost. And it's geographically quite isolated for international travel.
And finally, New Zealand, Auckland.
Top tier for work-life balance and overall quality of life. Stunning scenery. But also has relatively high taxes, hitting top rates early. Geographic isolation, similar to Australia. Housing and childcare are expensive, though maybe a touch less extreme than Sydney Central.
It really drives home that you can't just look at the salary number, can you? It's the whole package. Net income, costs, career, lifestyle, culture, healthcare.
Couldn't agree more. That $200,000 USD salary absolutely provides a foundation for a comfortable life in any of these fantastic cities. But the type of comfort, the financial pressures, the day-to-day reality that varies enormously.
So the final thought for you listening, based on this deep dive, which of these global hotspots genuinely aligns best with your priorities? What matters most to you? Career, family time, disposable income, culture, climate? And crucially, what trade-offs would you be willing to make?
Yeah, it's a really personal calculation.
Yeah.
Definitely something to think about much more deeply than just the headline salary figure if you're considering an international adventure.
And if you want to dig into the specific numbers, the conversion rates, the tax year details we use, we'll make sure that source material is available.
Definitely worth a look for the super curious.
Thanks for taking this deep dive with us today.